Now what I would like to do is invite our panelists up to the stage. As I invite you to the stage, I'm going to introduce them. First, we'll have with us Dr. Keith Fugley, working with the Economic Research Service at the USDA in Washington, D.C. Keith specializes in the economics of agricultural technical change, productivity, and science policy. He's an internationally recognized expert in research on productivity in agriculture. In 2012, Keith was recognized with the highest award conferred by the USDA, the Secretary's Honor Award. He worked also at the International Potato Center based in Indonesia, where he headed up SIPP's Social Science Research Program. He received his PhD in Agricultural and Applied Economics from the University of Minnesota. We also have with us today Dr. Tom Herlihy from Land O'Lakes. He's the Practice Area Manager for Crops, and he has 30 years of international agribusiness experience gained through managing USAID-funded projects in more than 30 countries in Africa, Eastern Europe, and Asia. At Land O'Lakes, Tom is responsible for designing and advising on USDA and USAID-funded projects that improve the productivity and marketing of staple food crops. He received his PhD from Boston University. Dr. Dilip Kulkarni, we welcome you. He is visiting us from India. He is the president of the Agri-Food Division of Jain Irrigation Systems. As president of the Agri-Food System Division of Jain Irrigation, he develops and implements new programs in agriculture and food processing and oversees building value chain operations with small-sized and medium-scale farmers. He also participates in Jain Irrigation's research and development operations, develops public-private partnership programs in India, and coordinates the company's activities for strategic policy developments. He's an expert on technology transfer and extension for farmers, and he holds a master's degree in food technology and a doctorate from Mysore, India. And finally, we have Jesus Madrazo, who is the Vice President of Corporate Engagement for Monsanto Company and our board chair at GHI. Jesus joined Monsanto as the legal director for Latin America in 1999, the North Division. Since then, he has served in a variety of commercial and management positions, including leading operations for Central America, the Caribbean, and Andean countries, based in Colombia, and leading the Latin American North business when he was based in Mexico City. Most recently, Jesus became Vice President of Corporate Engagement, leading the company's global communication and outreach efforts to focus on sustainability and partnership. He holds a legal degree from the Institute of Technology and Studies of Monterey and an MBA from Cardiff Business School in the UK. So let's talk a little bit more now about the GAP report. I wanted to open up the panel a little bit with just a bit of reflection from each of you on the importance of productivity. Why is it important in agriculture, and how does it provide benefit for folks all along the value chain? Keith, I'll start with you.
Sure. Thank you, Margaret. Well, at the farm level, of course, what productivity does when you increase TFP is really what you're doing is reducing the cost of producing output. You're allowing farmers to expand their production using fewer resources. So that translates into higher profits, higher net returns, and higher farm income. But as a lot of farmers do that at a market level, some of those gains in productivity, that increased output, is passed on to consumers in the forms of more abundant food at lower food prices. And that way, everybody in the economy gains, especially for poor households who spend most of their income on food. Mm-hmm. And there's a third way in which productivity in agriculture, particularly in very poor countries, stimulates the economy. And that is, it creates a lot of non-farm jobs and employment and growth, both because farm households with higher income are buying more goods and services from the non-farm economy, but also because of the increased commercialization of agricultural production, you have a lot of employment growth all along the marketing chain for food and agricultural products. So it's a real powerful driver of broad-based economic growth in these developing countries.
Thank you. And perspective from India, what's the benefit of productivity for the Indian farmer?
See, land is a constraint. And you have to produce more from the same land or even decreasing land because most of the land is going for urbanization. Mm. And from that point of view, I think productivity becomes very important. Produce more from the less. And you require again the total factors which are involved in productivity enhancement, like water or fertilizer, seeds, everything which goes into the farming system. It has to be more efficient. Whether it is water or fertilizer, the produce more from the less is the mantra, what you can say, for the future. That has to be there for every crop, for every kind of land, for every geographies, for every size of the farm. So the challenges are enormous. It's not an easy walk. And of course, new innovations are happening, new technologies are happening, and solutions are coming. But it requires a lot of advocacy, extension, hand-holding to small farmers. These are very important issues.
Thank you. Tom, your work in Africa, what are you seeing? What's the importance of productivity?
Well, thanks, Margaret. It's extremely important. When you talk about smallholder farmers in Africa that are growing maize, and only 33% of the farmers are using hybrid seed as opposed to save seed or open pollinated variety of seed, and they're only getting a ton an acre instead of 3, 4, 5 tons an acre, there's enormous room for improvement. I really like the other emphasis in the GAP report on agricultural practices, not just on the technology piece. One of the things that I do in my work with Land O'Lakes is we go out and we look at what are the practices farmers are following in terms of seed planting depth, seed spacing, row spacing, in terms of crops, and we try and work with them to improve that so they get better plant density on their farms. We do the same thing with dairy. Of course, Land O'Lakes is very well known as a dairy company, and we're very, very committed to our work in dairy development overseas. And so we try to work with farmers and communities on animal health, improving animal feed systems, and bringing farmers together so that they can aggregate their supply and become attractive business partners for dairies that want to buy that. I think India has probably one of the best success stories in the world about how dairy cooperatives have enabled that country to take off and meet the demand, as your report shows.
Jesus?
No doubt that productivity is an economic imperative, and a good for a farmer every year allows him to go back and invest in their farm, and that creates a virtuous circle. But I think the opportunity is to look at this in a more systemic way. And if you think about productivity, that's the foundation to driving sustainability on the farm and in agriculture. And this is so important as you think about driving productivity without making short-term gains and at the peril of the longer-term opportunity to nourish a growing population in 10, 20, 30 years from now. So it's so important that we do this in a very sustainable way. And this is where I'm so thrilled to see that in the GAP report, innovation is being highlighted as one of the key policy opportunities. We've made tremendous strides in the last 2 to 3 decades in bringing innovation that helps produce more with less resources, seed that is more resistant to droughts, agronomic practices like no-till that are phenomenal as well. But we have to keep innovating to continue to advance these opportunities. And I think in the context of food security, realization is that there is no single company, no single government, no single institution that can address these challenges by itself, and collaboration becomes the foundation for all of us to be able to meet these challenges in the future.
Great. Thank you. I have a quick question for Keith. We showed that GAP index up on the screen, and the rate of TFP growth globally is beginning to fall below that required rate that's needed. It's 1.69 now. What challenges and barriers are you seeing that in the next 30 to 40 years that that presents? Mm-hmm. I mean, I talked a little bit about it, but maybe you could share a bit more about what that is going to pose if we don't keep that average rate up.
Yeah.
What does that mean for the future?
Well, I think it's a good time to reflect on, you know, first of all, how did the acceleration in productivity that we have seen in agriculture take place? And if we go back to when, you know, Norm Borlaug was still with us and active in working with CIMBIT and so forth, a lot of the activity was going on, a lot of the support from USAID and so forth was in building these national agricultural innovation systems throughout the world. And there was tremendous advances being made back in the 1970s and 1980s in extending research systems and extension systems and building capacity in these systems around the world. And a lot of that payoff then came 10 or 20 years later when they started really delivering well-adapted technologies to farmers and creating the conditions under which those farmers could access and adopt those technologies. It's a long-term, it takes a patient investment to build those in systems that can start delivering those technologies to farmers. Unfortunately, around the 1990s, we lost some of the momentum in building these national agricultural research systems. They weren't fully developed throughout the world. We still see real gaps in Africa in terms of the ability to provide farmers with well-adapted technologies that they have access to, so we don't see rapid productivity growth taking place there. And we've also seen a loss of momentum here in the United States in funding agricultural research at our universities mm-hmm. and in our public laboratories. And so what we may be seeing now is the consequences of that loss of momentum in building these national and sustaining these national investments in agricultural research and technology dissemination. Now, in the last few years, we have seen some turnaround in some places of the world in investing in agricultural research, renewed growth. We've seen from the U.S. government, the Feed the Future initiative, and so forth. But it may take another decade or so to really see the benefits of this renewed growth in agricultural research, and the consequences that we may be seeing a slowdown in TFP in agricultural productivity here and in other parts around the world. And the flip side, of course, is that means less economic growth, higher food prices, more demands for land and water resources if you don't have the technology to improve the productivity of what you're working with today.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Kulkarni, what are you seeing in India with respect for demand for higher value food? So we hinted at it in the GAP report. We showed that chart showing the rise of the middle class. From your experience, how is that playing out with you in India?
Yeah, last decade or so, the dieting pattern of the Indian population is changing very fast. People are going in for high-protein food, fruits, vegetables, and demand is increasing, as you have depicted in your report. From where this new additional food material is going to come? Of course, as you mentioned, dairy industry has revolutionized and is ever increasing. We are today in world number one in milk production, but there is a big gap in protein and fruits and vegetables. The protein gap has to come, to be filled through maybe poultry and meat. And poultry industry will require a low-cost feed. That is very important because cost of feed is the most inhibiting factor in poultry development. So that is one factor. Fruits and vegetable productivity is very low in India. Technologies are already existing. Like you have mentioned in your report also, like we have recently launched a program with Coca-Cola collaboration. A project called Project Mahaunnati. We have introduced technologies like ultra-high density plantation in mango. Traditionally, something like only 40 trees are planted per acre, whereas now we have technologies where we plant something like 650 trees per acre. Mm. Pruning, keeping shape of the plant low, and we have 3 to 4-fold increase in productivity. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are such innovations and technologies available where we can increase the productivity of these crops, mm-hmm. particularly fruits, vegetables. Another example is like tissue culture banana. A lot of revolution has happened in tissue culture area. It's not a genetically modified, but it is just a simple vegetative cultivation. As against traditional, where first crop comes in 18 months, in tissue culture plants gives you production in first 9 to 10 months. Mm. So you get 3 crops in 2.5 years, as against 2 crops in 3 years. Mm. So that is how the productivity is increases. Even simply by irrigation and proper fertigation, the productivities can be increased. Particularly in India, most of the population is vegetarian, and they depend upon for their protein source on beans and pulses. And from that point of view, productivity of pulses is a big issue in India. Presently, almost 30% of pulses as a protein is imported from other countries, like from Canada or Myanmar or Vietnam. And in order to fill this gap, I think increasing productivity of pulses and beans is very important. Mm-hmm. Most of these are today cultivated on dry land, rain-fed, and no irrigation is given. So if we give just protective irrigation, 2 to 3 protective irrigation, the productivity can be doubled. Mm-hmm. Where we are producing today 2 to 3 quintals per acre, you can easily go up to 10 to 15 quintals per acre. Mm-hmm. So I mean, there are solutions available, but a lot of hand-holding, advocacy, extension work, investments in these are required.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And in Africa, tell us about the kind of, is there a rising demand for food? What is the structure of consumer demand looking like in Africa, and what are the opportunities there?
Well, that's a great question, Margaret. I'm most familiar with Kenya. I also work in Malawi and Zambia. And as we see urbanization grow, people are becoming consumers like we know here in America. Because of the commute, I think Nairobi has the second worst traffic on the planet after Cairo. Having lived in both places, I'm a little bit of an expert on it. So people are spending more time in their cars, they're spending more time at work, and so they want meals that are convenient. Mm-hmm. And so dairy products meet that need. Yogurts, cheeses, milk itself. They want, as you were mentioning, more protein, and they want to be able to have it more quickly. So what we're seeing is that pull effect, the growth of franchises. Subway is becoming huge. Pizza Hut, Kentucky Fried, all of these franchises. And there's also indigenous franchises that are growing in the cities, not just in Nairobi, but in Mombasa, Nakuru, Kisumu, Eldoret, and other places. So what's really needed in Africa is better infrastructure, better storage, better transport, better roads, better processing, so that there's less waste. One of the things that I'm trying to work on is post-harvest handling, and Land O'Lakes is working on this as well, because the FAO report that came out last year estimated that between 30 and 40% of all the food grown on farms in places like Africa never reaches the table of a consumer, and most of the waste happens going from the farm to the supermarket, versus Western countries where most of the waste happens between the supermarket and the home. Mm-hmm. Okay, so working on post-harvest handling, storage, logistics in Africa is going to be critical to try and bridge that total factor productivity gap.
Mm-hmm. And Latin America, you know a bit about that, Jesus. So please share a bit about some of the innovations and changes that you're seeing in Latin America that are helping with productivity.
I believe that Latin America has a tremendous opportunity. Probably agriculture is the brightest spot for Latin America as we look into the future. The region has everything going for itself. You have phenomenal natural resources, biodiversity. You have innovation taking place. You have farmers that have adopted very quickly innovation and that are very entrepreneurial. Established democracies, and to a great degree, we're also seeing that infrastructure, although there is a lot of work to be done in infrastructure, is still better than
other regions like Africa and some parts of Asia. So that plays to Latin America's favor. If you think about Latin America, though, it's a mosaic of countries, and you know, Margaret highlighted Brazil, Argentina, Uruguay, and Paraguay as countries that have adopted innovation, and we've seen their increasing productivity and output significantly over the past few years. And if you think about what has happened there, just take the example of Argentina. In the middle of the 1990s, Argentina started to adopt new innovations that helped the country in the less than 20 years move from about 45 million production of grains to more than 100 million tons of production of grains. Mm. If you look at what's happened in Brazil, in the last just 4 or 5 years, with the introduction of biotech traits in corn, you know, from 2009 to 2013, the productivity skyrocketed from 3.5 tons per hectare to 5.5 tons per hectare, and total output moved from about 50 million tons to 80 million tons, and that's just in a very short period of time. And of course, it was not only innovation, it was a combination of many different factors, but if you think about Latin America in terms of the opportunity and then the policies that can enable that, there is a gigantic opportunity. Not surprising that what we saw in the GATT report is that Latin America is probably the only region in the world that has been consistently above the TFP factor, and that plays to its advantage. But I think there is still an opportunity when you separate those South American countries that have been very proactive in adopting those policies to still advance innovation in countries like Mexico, in Central America, and some of the Andean countries. And I think when we do that, there is a huge opportunity to drive up productivity.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. You mentioned policies, and it's a big part of our GAP report is focusing on the right policies. So perhaps I could ask each one of you, you know, if you could be a policymaker and institute one single policy that would help really drive productivity, what would it be? I know we're probably going to get different ones, but that's okay. So perhaps starting with you, Keith, and then down the line.
Okay. All right. Well, I have spoken already about the real need to invest in long-term research and build capacity in agricultural research systems all around the world. I think the biggest gap, the biggest challenge remains to really in sub-Saharan Africa to see so that productivity in that part of the world can take off, because that remains sort of the lowest, both starting from the lowest level, but and we just don't see enough growth taking place there to meet the needs that that region of the world faces. At the same time, there's tremendous opportunities. I mean, what we observe from agricultural research is it's an extremely high payoff investment. It takes time. You have to, you know, it requires patience. But there isn't any other investment that a government can make that we have found that can stimulate agricultural growth as much as research can do in the long run. And there's a unique role that government needs to play in this as well, because a lot of the science and technology information can't really be patented by the private sector, and especially in poor countries where you don't really have the ability to protect intellectual property very well, the incentives for private R&D are fairly limited. And so you have to have a strong role of government supporting agricultural research. And as the countries develop and as the private sector gets more interested in investing in research in those areas, that allows the public sector to move its focus to more upstream, pre-commercial kind of R&D, so that these public and private sectors can complement one another in these research systems like they do here in the United States. But this is a role where we clearly, I think, need a strong public involvement to sustain and maintain productivity.
Dr.
Yeah, I agree with Keith, and also a lot of research already which is available has not reached. I'm speaking for developing countries. A lot of research innovations in order to take it to small farmers, a lot of investments are required in extension and advocacy. And it's not only government job, but also private sector can play a big role. Recently, we have launched in India a public-private partnership program in advocacy and extension work. This is first time happening that where industry is also spending maybe even more than what government is spending on extension activity. Mm. And I think this is going to play a big role in future. The experience of professionals from industry, the effectiveness of transferring knowledge to small farmers has been found to be far better than government extension workers in India. And if we are joining hands together, then the effectiveness is still better. Then there is also some policy changes required at government level, particularly water use efficiency and water rights. That's very important, particularly water-starved areas. Just to give you an example, because today water is considered to be a free commodity by farmers, there is too much of exploitation of water, whether it is groundwater or canal water. Example of state of Maharashtra, from where I come, 60% of the water available for irrigation is used by only 3% area on sugarcane crop. Mm-hmm. So it is a criminal waste where we are using so much of water for a crop like sugarcane, whereas it should have gone for crops like pulses and maybe grains and fruits and vegetables. So some policy changes are required. Maybe we may have to have mandatory requirements of water-saving devices for the crops like sugarcane.
Mm-hmm. Great. Policy?
One policy. Let farmers choose what they want to use to grow their food. Governments need to open their markets, let the seed companies come in, like Monsanto, like Syngenta, let the good fertilizer companies come in, the good crop protection companies come in, the companies that have the technology, the water use technology. Don't impede the ability of farmers to make science-based, intelligent choices. That would be the one policy I would urge on governments.
Who can argue with that?
but I'm sure I'll get an argument somewhere.
But I almost said, I think, Margaret, you put us on the spot, because that's a really difficult question. And I think, innovation and choices are so, so important. I think also it's so important to provide access to those technologies, to those farmers. And if you think just about, you asked me about Latin America, there are more than 40 million smallholders in Latin America that produce more than half of the food in the continent. So there is a huge opportunity still to make sure that those farmers have the options, they have the access and the education to be able to use those innovations. I fundamentally believe that today we've reached a point in which when you look at all of the innovation that is available today, from data science to biotechnology traits to genetics to crop protection to agronomic practices, when you bring all of this together, I do think that the biggest opportunity that we have is that, and this was highlighted in the GAP report, is that we not only can reach a point where we can freeze the agricultural footprint in the world, but we have the opportunity to start giving back land to the environment. And that is absolutely possible with the innovation and the tools that we have today, but it's not something that anyone can do alone. We have to work all together to be able to address that. That is something that can have a huge impact to our world. And I'm just thinking about my sons, my grandchildren, and I think they do deserve that a better world.
Thank you, Jesus. All right, we have a little bit of time just for maybe two questions from the audience. There's so much more we could talk about, but we have lunch and then we have the World Food Prize starting at 1. So if we have a chance now for just one or two people to ask some questions, if there's a burning question, and please be very brief, state your name, and who you're with, and then if you have a direction of a question to a particular panelist, please let me know. I believe we have microphones. Okay, there's one there, and then we'll take your question next. Okay? Yes.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Ajay Markandey. I'm from FAO. I just wanted to get a little bit of clarification here. Are we looking at higher productivity being synonymous with higher profits and real incomes of small farmers? And what is the evidence of that?
Well, they're not exactly synonymous because what happens when productivity goes, I mean, productivity, you're reducing the cost of producing agricultural products, but at a market level, that also can lead to lower food prices. And so some of those lower costs then are translated into lower food prices. And so only part of the benefits of that productivity is kept by farmers in terms of higher incomes. And part of it, and in many cases, eventually, the large part of it is actually goes to consumers in the form of lower cost food. So this higher productivity is really capturing this more total society-wide benefit of both the gains to consumers as well as the gains to farmers.
I would just add, they're not synonymous, but they're not mutually exclusive as well. And if you think about, driving small farmers' profitability, that's probably one of the better ways to be able to activate the economies of the rural sector that are instrumental to grow overall economies around the world.
Yeah, and the work Land O'Lakes does with farmers, we talk about farming as a business instead of as a way of life. And that means doing things like keeping a balance sheet, knowing how much your own labor costs, the cost of your kids' labor, what are you getting in terms of the inputs. And because Africa does have so far to go, it's going to require investment. So farmers are going to pay more. They're going to pay more for hybrid seed. They're going to pay more for fertilizer. Right now, the average farm in Africa has 1 kilo of fertilizer per acre. Soils in Africa lack organic matter because of poor farming traditional practices. So there's a lot we can do around agronomic practices and new technology, but we do have to keep our eye on it as a business and to make sure that it's profitable.
In addition to what you have said, particularly in cases where small farmers, they are deprived of access to market, now, in such cases, I think access to market becomes very important when the productivity increases happen. If there is a infrastructure issue, not proper roads, no proper warehousing, storage, transportation, then in that case, increased productivity becomes a bane for a small farmer. He is not able to sell the produce and the prices fall. So access to market becomes very important for such an productive increase, particularly for perishable commodities.
Okay, final question, I believe, is from this gentleman.
My name is H. Char. I'm a native Iowan. I live in Spencer. And I am an agricultural economist, worked for 35 years in development, as Tom did. We worked in a lot of the same places together. I've noticed in the course of my work and what I've done, when I returned to the United States, there's a disturbing public perception about the kind of things we're talking about. Many Americans who talk to me question whether what is the utility of rich countries like America, but specifically America, investing in research and development and total factor productivity in other countries. Aren't we simply turning customers into aren't we cutting our own throats by turning customers into competitors?
Anyone want to tackle that question? Probably a couple of you do.
Sure. No, I think the United States has played a real leadership role in forwarding and advancing agricultural science that has benefited the whole world, and I think we should take pride in that. In the long term, actually, it is extremely beneficial and has been shown to be beneficial to the U.S. economy because by developing, by helping other countries grow their economies, they become bigger and better trade partners for us. And so we end up exporting a lot more to them as we import more from them as well. So it's in our own self-economic interest, actually, to assist in the economic development of these countries. And for poor countries, that really means agricultural development. And we've seen, time and time again, as countries have grown their agriculture, they end up being big agricultural trade partners with us, both on the export and import side.
And I think also from just a global security dimension, I think that the U.S. has a role to play in helping provide global security, and a big part of that is food security. I think that it fits together, and it benefits us eventually to have a food secure world. And agricultural development is foundational for that. A final observation on that issue?
Very briefly, I think meeting food security by 2050 will require that not only the Americas, but all regions in the world really step up to the plate and drive that productivity in a sustainable way. So it's not either or. We need everyone being able to produce more with less.
Thank you. All right. Well, thanks. Our panelists, please.